So, first up on today's Old Mole, Bill Resnick is going to talk with Margaret Klein Salomon of the Climate Mobilization. They advocate a World War II-type great mobilization here and around the world to vastly reduce greenhouse gas emissions starting now. The group has just won climate emergency declarations in Berkeley and Richmond, California, and are making headway in Los Angeles. Here's Bill.
Margaret Klein Salomon, welcome to KABU.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Margaret Klein Salomon is a co-founder of the organization Climate Mobilization that won several important victories recently in California when the citizens of two cities, Berkeley and Los Angeles, persuaded the city councils to come near adopting climate energy declarations. So, Margaret Salomon, today, August 2nd, record temperatures are killing people across the globe. Huge wildfires driven by strong winds, absolutely, they can't control them. And then the record temperatures and the drought in California, it's raging across the American West. In co-founding the Climate Mobilization, you and your colleagues examining the climate science predicted this. And this is just, in fact, the start, and it's going to get worse. In reading the mobilization, I realized that your biography and the mobilization are closely intertwined. Tell us about the climate mobilization and why you and others got together to found it.
So before I jump into that, let me just say, because I have some late-breaking news, which is last week, Richmond, California, declared a climate emergency and commit to climate mobilization, and also to becoming an advocate for climate mobilization. So, so that's two cities in California who have declared climate emergency. And as you said, we're working in Los Angeles, getting close to getting a climate emergency mobilization department established. What the climate mobilization is, we offer an alternative policy framework and an alternative communications framework for approaching the climate crisis. The climate crisis is it's such a huge problem and a huge threat, and it's going to take such a huge solution. It's basically overwhelmed our existing institutions, including legacy environmental organizations. Virtually no institution in American life has grappled with, reckoned with, the real threat of the climate emergency. And right now, because of that, we as a society are committing passive suicide, right? We are going full speed ahead on a path that leads only to collapse, and sooner rather than later.
The sooner rather than later, it seems to me, is the point. Some people say, well, we have a lot of time, and if it really turns out bad, then we have time to do it. But in fact, it's likely to become irreversible. The physics of it is very clear and has been known for 100 years. We could be on a globe that is, in fact, a dying and roasting to death, and there's nothing we can do about it.
I would say what's perhaps even more amazing is that what you just said, the kind of maybe we're doomed idea, is not uncommon. It is, in fact, widely shared. And I would say shared by virtually everyone within the legacy climate and environmental movement. There is a feeling, a vast feeling of despair and helplessness. That's what's experienced privately. But then publicly, they say, let's do carbon pricing. Let's enact small policies to tweak the market that will create a gradual reduction in fossil fuels. Simply stated, gradualism, or the idea that we should reduce emissions gradually over the course of decades, it makes no sense. Perhaps that could have worked if we had implemented it 40 years ago. I'm not even sure, but perhaps. But we didn't, and we're at this absolute crisis point now where the climate mobilization is one of the only organizations in the United States that is actually advocating response that is at scale, a response with the aim of protecting humanity and the natural world, avoiding collapse, not some kind of compromised aim of like, yeah, reducing emissions, making the problem slightly less acute. I mean, it's just do or die time, and we need to go all the way.
One of the things that's attracted me to the climate mobilization, I'm one of those thousands of small donors. But what attracts me is that you're confident that it can be done, that the American people will support you. You have marshaled so much information. You say the American people will support you, will support a climate mobilization when they come to recognize how severe it is. And you point to the experience of World War II. And I think it's important to talk to people about that, that the historical record shows that the people will support a real huge mobilization where all of industry is required to, in fact, convert themselves into meeting the threat.
So in World War II, as the war was ramping up in Europe and Asia, the United States was in denial for years. Isolationism, the idea that it's not our war, let's just stay out of, you know, it doesn't affect us. But the bombing at Pearl Harbor created a collective awakening. Even before Pearl Harbor, there was a strong minority in favor of preparedness and war. And even FDR, the president, understood the threat. So it wasn't like Pearl Harbor took us from zero to 100, but it took the need for all-out war from a minority position to a national consensus position. And when the country understood that we have to do this, it's simply not a choice. They are coming for us. We are not safe. We have to do this. That inspired a kind of mode switch or paradigm switch from a kind of consumer society where individuals are out for number one to a mission-driven emergency response society. Social psychologists talk about this phenomenon. It's an evolutionary phenomenon of when under threat, the group can pull together and act more like a unit than a collection of individuals, act with more common intention. So when we did that, when we mobilized and had all hands on deck, all sectors participating, and 40% of vegetables were grown at home in victory gardens, and 10% of Americans moved to a different state to work in a war job, and women went into factories for the first time, and cars were banned. The new consumer cars were banned because all of those factories were used to make tanks and planes.
The entire auto industry and plane industry was taken over by the public.
And meat, gasoline, and tires were all rationed through fair shares measures, which were cheerfully accepted by the public, because again, there is a collective understanding. We have no choice. We have to achieve this mission. We have to win this war. And so I'm an optimist. That doesn't cause me to change my estimation of the crisis as an absolute acute existential threat to all life.
And in fact, we might get lucky that we aren't doomed yet. There's real possibilities that people will awake before the irreversibility has occurred. And I think we have to assume that there's no reason to give up. Some of the doomsayers are making a big mistake when they say, well, just live happy, do drugs, and wait for the inevitable. It isn't inevitable, it seems to me, yet, but it could become that.
I think that unless you have this understanding of mobilization, this understanding that humanity does have the capability for collective action towards a common purpose, particularly meeting an existential threat, if you don't understand that concept, then yeah, I can understand why you'd be hopeless. Because market mechanisms and policies that don't bother anyone too much are not going to solve this. However, I'm an optimist in that I really believe in the power of human potential. I think we're incredible geniuses. You know, what we can accomplish in terms of technology, solar, regenerative agriculture, our deepening our understanding of how ecosystems work and carbon drawdown. We can do amazing things. We just haven't tried any kind of reasonable scale. It's still a tiny portion of humanity that's working on these problems when we need all hands on deck.
This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Radio. I'm talking to Margaret Klein Salomon, one of the founders of the Climate Mobilization. We've discussed the climate mobilization, in fact, the kind of World War II wartime mobilization, to use all of the technologies we already developed to reduce greenhouse gas emissions to zero very quickly and maybe save the planet. Margaret, another reason that seems to me for optimism is we have all the technologies and the know-how. They are operating now today. It's not as if we have to learn how to reforest. It's not as if regenerative agriculture is not, in fact, the principles of it are well known. Now, the industrial growers don't want to do it because it's different than their system of using pesticides and lots of fossil fuels and all the rest to level great areas of the world and plant them in monocrops, which is, and they make a lot of money doing that. But there are lots of farmers all over the world, movements of farmers, farmers in the United States who are using regenerative methods. And that's also true of energy production. We could ramp up renewable energy production so rapidly. Every contractor in the United States, every small little company knows how to put up solar panels. Anybody who built a kitchen, it's so much more complicated than putting in solar panels. We could, in fact, both conserve electricity enormously and make cities self-sufficient very quickly, even cities with a lot of cloud cover.
Buckminster Fuller said, the future is here. It's just not widely distributed or evenly distributed. So what you're saying is exactly right. We have the solutions that we need to put in place to eliminate emissions and draw down excess emissions, because we're already too hot. We're already at 410 parts per million. So we already have it. I mean, talking about technological breakthroughs, these inevitably will come even at a faster rate if we focus our collective understanding and energy on solving this problem rather than creating the next best iPhone and the improving consumer goods, which is how our economy is focused now. But you're absolutely right. We certainly should not be waiting for technological advancement. What we need to do more than anything is implement renewable energy, regenerative agriculture, zero carbon, regenerative economy, zero waste. We need to be implementing that at scale. That is the huge challenge, because energy revolutions or any kind of change in how the economy and society works, these usually take longer, and they do, and especially to achieve like the level of penetration that we need now, which is like 100%. We're already making this transition, but it's just way, way, way too slow. The climate mobilization wants to take all of these solutions and scale them up to 1,000 or 10,000 times the scale they're at now, and just implement them all over the country as fast as possible.
What about the rest of the world? The U.S. is sort of semi-plateaued in terms of, although we're still the biggest polluter, although China, I guess, has passed us in some ways. What about the rest of the world? I think the Europeans are ready to act, actually. The European society is far more aware than the U.S. right now. What about China and India? It seems to me we have to share our wealth, both technology and money. It's not just a matter of electrifying the United States and growing forests here and doing regenerative agriculture here. There are 20 other countries in the world where if they adopted the program, the problem could well be solved. But it's not just a U.S. problem, though.
Right, absolutely. While we focus our campaigning in the United States, you're absolutely right, it's just one piece of the puzzle. But I feel that being an American, you kind of have to lead where you are, and understanding the United States' huge level of responsibility for creating this crisis and stepping into a role like what we're asking the country to do, basically a 180 and lead in a totally different direction than the fossil fuel, consumer economy, industrialized agriculture direction that we've been spreading across the globe for decades. The power of American leadership surely has been degraded by the Trump administration, but if we achieve this mobilization, I think the world would say, basically, oh, what have you been waiting for? We've wanted to do this. We're very interested in this. We understand the scale of the problem, but you guys have been blocking progress. And now, okay, you're really willing to take this on. Okay, we will join you. And the climate mobilization, we call for the United States to bring the world to zero emissions plus drawdown by 2030, our top foreign policy priority. And I mean, it makes sense. Everything the climate mobilization advocates for is, on one hand, like it sounds so radical and like it could never happen. It's amazing. And then on the other hand, it's just common sense. Of course, our top foreign policy priority should be to decarbonize the planet. If we don't do that, no one is safe. We have to achieve that if we want to continue to survive and have a chance at thriving as a species here on this planet. So absolutely, technology sharing, direct aid, we cannot solve this problem in isolation. But I believe that if the United States steps up to solve it, that we will not be alone.
You know, Margaret, one thing we didn't talk about is the problem of capitalist elites just refuse to give up power. They don't want to, and right now they're trying to eliminate any government, any public control of their activities, and they've done really well over the last 40 years. They've succeeded, actually, in so many ways, and they're not going to give up, and it's going to be a struggle. But the people will win the struggle, and even the military is likely to stand with the people rather than the elites. The military knows, in fact, how serious this is in their threat assessments. So I think we really do have a chance. You're devoting your life to that. One final thing that we should talk about, Berkeley, Los Angeles, and Richmond.
Two cities in California, Berkeley and Richmond, have now both declared climate emergency, commit to World War II scale climate mobilization, and called for the state and national governments to do the same, to initiate an emergency climate mobilization that eliminates emissions as quickly as possible and protects humanity in the natural world. So that is very exciting. That's following Hoboken, New Jersey, and Montgomery County, Maryland, which did the same in late 2017. And then in Los Angeles, we are close to getting a climate emergency mobilization department up and running. We have $500,000 allocated for it in the budget, that this department would be in charge of overseeing Los Angeles's transition, rapid transition to zero emissions, and also would act as an advocate to the state level, to other cities, and ultimately going nationally. We really think that working locally has a lot of advantages. It's the least corporate-controlled arm of government. It's the most accessible to citizens, and cities are getting hit so hard by the climate crisis. But we're really looking to push cities to go beyond their kind of traditional role. Usually when you think about climate action in cities, you think about cities reducing their emissions. And yes, we want to do that. However, no city can solve this problem. So the idea of city as advocate, working to spread the need for emergency climate mobilization to other cities and to higher levels of government is, I think, a really compelling strategic tactic.
Allegedly green and clean Portland, that's done so well in advertising itself as the city of the future, which it isn't, because, in fact, the entirety of the political elite in this state looks to the two big investor-owned utilities here who are very clever to lead the way, and they are, of course, trying to stop everything. We don't even have net metering here in Portland, Oregon. But that's another matter that can be solved, actually, if the people rise up here a little bit. And we have something on the ballot to create an emergency fund here in Portland. So things are looking up here a little bit. Margaret Salomon, it was really good talking to you. Thank you so much. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, and I just want to put in an invitation to all listeners to come to our website, theclimatemobilization.org, and get involved. You can volunteer, organize your city. This is time for everyone to realize that no one is coming to save us. We have to do it.
I have lived for love, but now that's not enough. Crying. is not a friend. No friend, no friends, we're